Good morning, Dr. Berry. Good morning, Willie. Nice to see you back with us.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me.
The band's all here.
Nice. It's nice to see everybody, even if I'm remoting in. Nice to see you. On the COVID front, the numbers are a bit mixed today. Nationwide, we're still seeing a positive progression. So we're seeing cases down 18%. Hospitalizations are down 14%. Deaths are down as well, but still only the 432 deaths per day. So we're still losing over 400 Americans a day. And I think that's a critical reminder for all of us of how serious this infection can be. In Washington state, we're actually starting to see cases trend up. So they're up 14% in the last week, which it's too early to say whether or not that's part of a larger trend that we're going to see, or if we're going to see that flatten out. But given the amount of transmission we're seeing, particularly with the return to school at this point, I would not be surprised if that continues up. But the biggest thing that would turn that around is more of us moving forward and getting our Omicron-specific boosters. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. When it comes to Jefferson County, we have diagnosed 5,853 cases of COVID-19. That puts our current case rate at 370 per 100,000, which is roughly flat from last week. Our percent positivity is 9.8%, still looking at about a 50% case ascertainment rate there. I did receive word from Jefferson Healthcare that we have two people currently hospitalized with COVID-19. Haven't gotten a lot of data on them yet, so we'll be digging more into that later today. We thankfully have had no new deaths due to COVID-19, so we still are at 31 for the number of our citizens we've lost to this infection. In neighboring Clallam County, we have diagnosed 15,577 cases of COVID-19. That puts us at a case rate of 170 per 100,000 with a percent positivity of 7.5 and rough case ascertainment rate of about 50% as well. We have one individual hospitalized in Clallam County for a total of 442 hospitalizations and no new deaths in Clallam either for a total of 124 of our citizens lost to COVID-19. So the big news on the COVID front is the Omicron-specific boosters. We are seeing more vaccine come into our community. So we are now at a point where it is appropriate to move forward with getting vaccinated regardless of your risk status. Our mass vaccination clinics, I'm sure Willie will talk more about it, have been busy and filling up quickly. But our pharmacy partners have been really stepping up. So Tri-Area Pharmacy is vaccinating very efficiently. Jefferson Healthcare is also vaccinating, and the local Safeway Pharmacy in Port Townsend has been doing a lot of vaccinating. So would really encourage folks to move forward with getting your bivalent or Omicron-specific booster, two names for the same thing. For anyone 12 and up, if it's been 2 months or more since your last infection or vaccination, as we've discussed on this program before, it's most effective if it's actually 4 months since your last infection or vaccine. So if you're not in a very high risk group, waiting that 4 months, you're going to get your best benefit from getting vaccinated. A little bit on the MPV front, we have diagnosed 564 cases in Washington state at this point. Still no documented cases in Jefferson County and only one confirmed case in Clallam County with two suspect cases associated with that case. We have diagnosed over 24,000 cases nationwide of MPV. So we're still seeing kind of a more significant uptick in cases nationwide than we're seeing in Washington state. We do have adequate vaccine in Jefferson, Clallam County, and Washington state as a whole. So anyone who's had multiple partners in the last year, any gay or bisexual man or transgender person who has sex with men, regardless of your sexual history, is eligible for that vaccine. We do have it at the health department, so give us a call or sign up online, and we'll make sure and get you vaccinated. One last quick note on the infectious disease front before we move into questions is we are moving into flu season. So I really want to encourage everyone to go forward and get your flu vaccine as well. You can get that at the same time as your COVID vaccine, and a lot of people are choosing to do that. The biggest thing that we can do to protect ourselves and our community as we move into the fall is to get vaccinated, both with our COVID boosters and get our flu shot. That's how we protect ourselves, our neighbors, and our healthcare system as we move into the fall. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Anyone got a question? Burning question?
A couple. I'm glad you spoke about the flu, Dr. Barry. I do feel like, you know, as we come in, you know, it's concerning to hear the rates going up, and school seems like a very logical bellwether for that, or causation. But can you talk about how other mitigations other than vaccines, masking and everything, might be effective in combating both flu and COVID simultaneously as we enter this fall season?
Sure. So we do have a vaccine for the flu, encourage everyone to get it. But also our masking goes a long way to reduce transmission of the flu. That was really the primary thing that really stopped the flu for the last 2 years in our community, was that we were masking indoors. And so as we see more and more people unmasking indoors, we're very likely to see a significant return of the flu. That's what we've seen in some parts of the Southern Hemisphere, that are where places are largely unmasked indoors, as the flu came back, and it came back pretty hard. And so as we will continue to monitor for flu, we do what's called sentinel surveillance. We don't count all the flu cases. And we're not seeing kind of epidemic levels of flu yet, but we always are monitoring that every week. And if we see a significant spike in flu cases, I think that would be another time where it'd be really meaningful for us to all mask indoors to reduce the risk of transmitting the flu. Just like COVID, flu can transmit before you develop symptoms. And so it's really important to protect ourselves and each other. The flu is not as deadly as COVID-19, but it does still kill Americans every year, particularly vulnerable Americans who are immunosuppressed. Elders or young children can die of the flu. So really important to protect each other from that. And all of the ventilation work that we've been doing around COVID-19 also helps for all other infectious diseases. So good ventilation makes a big difference there as well.
And paid PTO, right? Stay home if you're sick?
Yeah. Really, goodness, yes. So
biggest change in my outlook on a lot of these issues.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, you know, we have a work ethic that has encouraged us to come to work when we're sick. We have, some might argue, an economy that has encouraged us to come to work when we're sick. But that, from a public health standpoint, is not a healthy thing to do. And it's not good for your body either. You know, as a family physician, if you're sick, I'm going to encourage you to rest, get some sleep, take care of yourself. And the biggest thing you can do to both improve your health and protect the people around you is to not go to work when you're sick. Even if you don't have COVID, even if you tested negative, you don't want to give anything else to anyone else at your work. And remember, what we've learned from COVID is you don't know the clinical status of the people around you. There are disabilities you can't see. There are people who are immunosuppressed, who are navigating the world, who really can't handle those infections as well as you might be able to.
Great, thank you. And then one other, I was still on tilt about the school, and I missed the case rate in Jefferson County. What is that this
week? Sure, we're at 370 per 100,000, so roughly flat from last week.
And then my last question is, you know, If about a sixth of our residents have tested positive, right, about a little less than 6,000, and our case ascertainment is, you know, a little less than 50%. So, I mean, I haven't heard any word in a long time about herd immunity. And I think that's because of the evolution of the virus. But would you agree then that about a third or a little less than a half of our residents is all that have had COVID at this point? I guess I'm just curious, not that it means much, I'm just curious where we are.
Sure. You know, I'd have to do a little bit more complex math on that one, and I can bring that to our next week. What it really, to do that well, you want to look at kind of the area under the curve for this whole time. So we've had different case ascertainment rates at different times. And so apply that to our differential case rates over the last 2 years, and then sum all of that. Can do that, just not at this moment. I would have to get a little more data in front of me. But I would say the concept of herd immunity has become more complex when it comes to how the virus is mutated. So really, the only infection that is preventing subsequent infection right now is if you got BA4 or 5. So basically, if you got COVID here June or later, you're more likely to have had BA4 or 5. Other than that, previous infections, wild type infection way back in 2020 really isn't buying you much. Getting Delta isn't buying you much as far as preventing symptomatic disease. Thankfully, we are seeing persistence of BA4 and 5, and so that is leading to mounting herd immunity. And I think that's actually a little bit of what we're seeing in Clallam. When you compare the different case rates, Clallam got hit much harder with BA4 and 5 a few months ago. And so many people have had the infection, and that I think is driving down some of those case rates there. But the best way to prevent infection, the safest way to prevent infection, is getting vaccinated. So getting that Omicron specific booster. And I do want to acknowledge that our community is doing that. We are really seeing heavy demand for the booster in our community. And I think that's going to make a huge difference in our case rates down the road.
And I'm not asking you to do busy work that has no meaning. And it sounds like going back through Delta and before would not have any actual constructive information. So please don't do that. But I might ask you again.
Okay.
Five for a year, I might say, hey, what's our herd immunity if it stays as static?
No, last year we used to calculate that a lot because we were really shooting for, you know, getting 80% of us to some level of immunity. But we're in a slightly different space now.
Thank you.
Kate, did you have any questions?
Yeah, I have a question about kind of, you know, active management of risk. And I've really relied on the on having home test kits to be able to test before seeing my parents who are older, say, or going into large group meetings, which are resuming more and more. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, do you have any sense, obviously the free test kit pipeline has been shut down, which is, I think, really unfortunate, but do you have a sense of if tests will continue to be widely available, and also any sense if the cost on that might go down, or how do we continue to use that as a tool in the toolbox and incentivize folks to be using that tool?
Yeah, that's a big question on our end too. And it's one we're raising at state calls at this point. So the federal support for free test kits has gone away. The state does still have the Say Yes COVID test program. So you can still get free tests from the state, but we anticipate that that is likely gonna go away in the coming months, potentially around the time that the emergency declaration goes away, but it's not clear yet. We haven't gotten a clear answer from the state on that one. The other thing is, that we have is that the free tests that come from Jefferson County Public Health actually come through the state to us, and then we send them out to our libraries and our fire departments. And so if we lost state support for that, it would be very challenging as a small public health system to maintain that program. So I would say, as far as planning on our end as a community, I would anticipate that free testing program is likely to fade out somewhere in the fall. However, we do have a commitment from the state to continue to fund testing in schools, so our schools will still have ready access for testing. And we as a department have prioritized making sure there's testing available for high risk spaces, so shelters, long-term care, jail. We support all of that testing. And even if we have to buy them ourselves, we plan on doing that to make sure that we can still protect those highest risk folks. But I think that will change the way the general public navigates testing once it becomes not free. Many of us have capacity to purchase tests at pharmacies, and I think they'll still be widely available at pharmacies, but not all of us do. And so I think that's some brainstorming we need to do for how we will support the most vulnerable in our community in testing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
It's this great challenge as a country as a whole. We try to move forward from COVID, but there's this tendency for the funding streams to disappear before we're really at a place where we can move forward from COVID. And that's going to be challenging.
Yeah. And I mean, at $10 a pop, that's really expensive. I had a cold last week and tested every day, you know, and like a lot of folks aren't in a position to be able to do that, especially a few family members or
it's not an easy answer right now, for sure.
When I got my booster at Safeway at the drive-through, they gave me 8 free test kits.
Oh,
I didn't ask for them.
Nice.
Would you like them? And I said, okay.
Nice. Great.
Yes. So knowing that these programs are likely to go away, definitely order from Say Yes COVID tests. Get some of those state tests in the Jefferson County so that you can have them. And I would think about, you know, when you're sick, testing maybe the first 2 days of infection, maybe the first 3, and then saving the rest. Prioritizing asymptomatic testing for if you're going to a high-risk space, If you're going to be meeting a very high risk relative, something like that, where you're going to be unmasked, that'd be when I would lean on those kinds of tests.
And I remember you talking earlier about the expiration dates on the kits being extended to a later date. I mean, I still have kits I got a few months ago, and I, at that time when you said that, I think I added 6 months onto them or something. But is there any updated guidance on those early tests that we're still hanging on to?
It's still saying generally 18 months from their manufacture date. So if you can find their manufacture date on the box, right, then add 18. That said, if you have tests in your house, they've been maintained at room temperature, you didn't leave them in a car or freeze them somehow, they're very likely to still be effective. So don't throw them away, especially when things start getting short. As long as you see the control line, it's likely still a good test. If you don't see a control line or there's anything odd about that control line, then don't trust that test and get another one.
It's funny how when COVID gets closer to you, my chosen family all got COVID. Not my mom or Ike, not my closest family members, but my next circle out there. And I was like, oh my God, when is the last time I hugged and kissed them? It was a while ago, yeah, unfortunately. So still, when it gets close to you, you kind of get like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, the hackles go up. Sure. So my hackles are a little bit up right now. And everyone stay healthy. And if you've got COVID, take care of yourself and take care of your loved ones.
And one last thing that might be worth raising is there is a state program to support funding for individuals to stay home called Care Connect. So if you don't have paid sick leave through your work and you want to access that program, there is state funding for that. And we can make sure that's linked from our website because we really want to make it possible for everyone, regardless of their employment, to stay home when they're sick with COVID.
Yeah. Any questions for?
Can I ask one other question? COVID is coming in my close family circle as well. And when one of my close family members that has it right now is immunocompromised, and they were advised 20 days of isolation. Is that
yeah,
norm?
That's if you're true. Immunocompromised? Yes. Yeah. So it's 10 days except for immunosuppressed individuals, and then it's 20 days. The reason for that is because people who are immunocompromised tend to shed live virus much longer than people who don't, because their immune system hasn't killed it. And that's something that we've definitely seen in the hospital setting. But it's really exhausting for immunocompromised individuals to stay
isolated. Some people are quarantined, but I'm sure for most people it is. It's treated as a vacation by some of my family. I don't have to see anyone.
I mean, for people who have the option of like going and spending some time in the woods, you know, like that can be great. But for many, it's very, very challenging.
I guess I thought the isolation, if we had a positive case and you're symptom free after 5 days, that was enough.
That's everybody except for the immunocompromised. And I think that is one of the challenges in all of this COVID communication, is that we often forget this most high-risk group. And so a lot of the guidance will say like, yay, it's 5 days, except for the immunocompromised. And that's often, unfortunately, the way we talk about immunosuppressed individuals, is we kind of put an asterisk at the bottom for their experience. Right. But it is 20 days, ideally. If you're having challenges related to that and your work, please feel free to call the health department. We can help you problem solve with your employer how to keep you safe and your other staff safe.
I mean, how does one access, if you're a small employer, how do you access these state funds to help folks stay out with?
It's individual. So I don't believe it's actually the employer that accesses the funds, but it is like there's rent relief. There's all kinds of things to help people actually stay home. And I think not enough members of our community are aware of those supports. And so it's important to me. It's actually something we piloted in Clallam County back in 2020. We had a lot of migrant farm workers who don't have, you know, workman's comp or things to keep them safe when they stay home. And so we piloted a program of paying rent for folks who couldn't otherwise afford to miss work. And then the state picked it up. And so now it's a state funded program.
So independent contractors, gig workers all qualify for this?
Yeah.
Wow.
Even if you're undocumented, you qualify. So it's a good program. It's a challenge for small businesses because it doesn't handle the, you know, workforce aspect. But it does really help individuals, workers.
Yeah, please do make sure there's a link on the public health website.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about that.
Can you repeat how folks access that, please?
So it's Care Connect, and you access it by calling a state number. So we'll make a Facebook post about it and put that up so folks can know.
Thank you.
I've also wondered if there's a shortage of 500 and 1,000 piece puzzles out there. Because I imagine millions of people buying puzzles to do when they're on quarantine. So I was contemplating a puzzle delivery to the porch of my friends. So
anyway. Yeah, that's a great idea. Soup and puzzles. Always welcome.
Well, I'm sure there were KPTZ questions because I saw them go by. And so.
All right. So jumping into KPTZ, we did have one question on polio. We'll save that for the end and come back so we can focus on COVID up front, but it's a good question. One question was asking about the bivalent boosters and potentially mixing the formulation, so Moderna versus Pfizer. One of the biggest reasons you might be getting Pfizer right now is there's a nationwide shortage of Moderna. And so in Jefferson County, we're primarily leaning on Pfizer because we just haven't been able to access Moderna upfront. So this person was asking, they had gotten all Moderna shots and they were wondering whether or not they should get a Pfizer booster. With the original boosters, we did actually see an increased immune response from mixing your formulation. So you got a little bit more cross-reactivity, which we think is going to provide longer lasting immunity down the road. That level of testing hasn't been done with these particular boosters, so hard to say, though it stands to reason that that same mixing would hold true here. The boosters, the Omicron-specific boosters, are roughly equivalent at this point. And so I would take whichever one your pharmacy or mass vaccination clinic is offering. They're all very good. And that mixing may potentially increase your immune response. We just don't have the data to confirm that yet at this point. This next person was expressing some frustration that the Novavax vaccine has not been approved as a booster yet, and why not? So it is true, the Novavax vaccine, which is a non-mRNA vaccine, preferred by some folks who didn't want to have an mRNA vaccine, is not yet approved as a booster. The primary reason for that is that Novavax did apply to be a booster, but all of their data was for individuals who had received the Novavax primary series. And they didn't have any data on the efficacy of the Novavax booster for people who had gotten one of the mRNA vaccines, which is the vast majority of the United States. And so the FDA didn't feel like they had enough data to say that that would be beneficial for the majority of the population. But there is a trial ongoing from Novavax right now looking at the efficacy of their Omicron-specific booster that started in May. So we should have that data soon. And I anticipate we are likely to see a Novavax booster very, very soon, probably in the coming months, but it's just not yet been approved. But that's the primary reason, is that they didn't have data for what is the experience of most Americans at this point. Couple other questions here. Let's see. This person had COVID-19 August 15th, had Paxlovid, and then had some rebound symptoms starting August 17th. How long should I wait to get the new Omicron booster? And I would say take your first day of symptoms, so it looks like August 5th, then add 4 months to that. And so generally 4 months past August 5th, unless you're in a very high risk group. So if you are undergoing chemotherapy, if you're immunosuppressed, if you're over 65 and have multiple underlying health conditions, I would get that 2 months after or August 5th. So depending on your risk status, just add 2 months to August 5th. If you're in kind of the general risk group, add 4 months. So August 5th. The good news is in August, you likely had BA5. And so you likely do have some immunity to our current circulating variant. So it's not as emergent that you move forward with your booster today. This next person asks, does the body's ability to resist coronaviruses weaken with age? And the answer is your body's immunity to resist any virus weakens with age and to resist any bacterial infection. All of the your body's immune system decreases its ability to fight as you get older. And so that's really what we see with a wide variety of infections, not just coronavirus, but the flu, bacterial infections, all those kinds of things. So this person was asking, you know, if COVID is, I'm in my 40s, if COVID is still endemic in my 60s and 70s, will my body's ability to fend it off be degraded? And the answer is probably yes, but it's not really COVID specific. It's just your body's ability to fight off anything. The biggest thing that you can do to improve your body's ability to fight off infections is to do everything else to stay healthy. Eat well, sleep, exercise, take care of yourself where you can. I'm seeing that it looks like the videos for some of my colleagues are freezing, but hopefully everyone can still hear me okay. Good, I see some nodding.
I think it was your video.
And then, yeah, I figure it's probably me. Luckily I'm called in, so you should still be able to hear me. Is it possible to catch such a low dose of COVID and combat it so well that one experiences very low level of symptoms and does not test positive on a rapid antigen test at all? And the answer is yes. So particularly for fully vaccinated individuals who are up to date on all their boosters, we do see cases where people basically their immune system fights it. So you develop symptoms, and that's actually your immune system responding to your vaccine, but you never actually go on to develop a severe case of the virus or potentially even test positive on an antigen test. The reason why we know that those folks do get it is they do often test positive on a PCR test. This person particularly had a significant exposure in their life, had some friends who had gotten COVID, and so they're wondering, you know, what does that mean for my booster timing? And I would say, as far as affecting when you time your booster, I would only really count infections that you were able to document. So if you had this occasion where you may have had COVID, but it's not clear, you never tested positive, I would still go ahead and get the booster at 4 months since your last either prior infection or booster that you'd had before that time. It's possible you didn't get it at all, got something else, or it's possible that your body fought it off so well that it didn't really significantly stimulate your immune system enough to prevent future infection. So that all to say, only push back your booster if you really know you had COVID, if you tested positive for COVID and you know that that happened. Last but not least, if you were really, really curious, you could potentially get a PCR because those tend to stay positive for months after you've had COVID, but is it a good use of your time and money and healthcare system function? Probably not. So I wouldn't really push for that at this point. Last but not least, someone asked about polio. So if you've been following the news, polio has been detected in New York. The first case that was diagnosed was an individual who developed paralytic polio. And then subsequently they tested the wastewater in New York and found that hundreds of people in that area have COVID, and that's expected. A little bit about polio. It is something that comes up as we talk about COVID. I know when I've talked to folks who are vaccine hesitant, they often reference polio. They say, like, I got my polio vaccine, but that was a scary virus. You know, people were getting up in iron lungs. And the interesting thing about polio is it's actually very similar to COVID. Most people who got polio felt like they had a cold or the flu, but some people ended up in iron lungs. And that's very, very similar to COVID. Most people who get COVID feel like they have a cold or the flu. And some people end on ventilators and some people die. And so it's actually a pretty good analogy to what we're dealing with right now. But I think the challenge we have has been messaging and politics has gotten in the way of people perceiving how dangerous COVID is. But polio is circulating in New York. And unfortunately, we are not doing enough wastewater surveillance in the rest of the country to find out when polio arrives in other parts of the country. But if it's circulating widely in New York, there's a high probability that it's going to spread beyond New York. As we've learned before, viruses don't follow state boundaries. And so I would be very much unsurprised if at some point we started diagnosing polio out here. Particularly in places where we have low vaccine coverage for polio, we are likely to see further transmission. Polio is spread through the fecal-oral route, but it also has very likely respiratory component as well. So if you have not been vaccinated against polio, I would highly encourage you to get vaccinated against polio. I have friends and relatives who have been vaccine hesitant or have spaced out their vaccines for their children. And often the one that they pick to skip is polio, because we historically haven't had it in the United States, but we do have it now. So if you are one of those parents who chose not to vaccinate your kids against polio, I would strongly encourage you to move forward with getting them vaccinated, because we are very likely to see it get out here. I am pushing our state really hard to start doing wastewater surveillance for polio. As you guys know, we have a wastewater surveillance site in Jefferson County. It costs money for the state to change over that to a polio observation site, but I do really think that would make a big difference. And so, but it's a state-funded program, so I can't make them do that, but I'm really encouraging them to do that because it's a really good way for us to catch polio before we end up with anyone paralyzed from it. But specifically this individual's question was, I have a friend who knows that she was not vaccinated because her family was Christian Scientist. And she's in her 70s. Does it make sense for her to get vaccinated? And I would say yes, actually. Most adults in our country got vaccinated. But if you really know that you didn't, I would go forward with getting the vaccine series. Polio was endemic in the 1930s and 40s in our country. However, that doesn't guarantee that you had it. And it doesn't necessarily guarantee that you have persistent immunity from any mild infection you might have gotten back then. So do go ahead and get vaccinated if you know that you haven't, or particularly if you have kids who are not vaccinated, really important to get them vaccinated soon. And so with that, happy to take any further questions that came from our commissioners in that process or pass to Willie.
I have one just follow-up question on the monitoring sewage and everything. Is it, how cost prohibitive would it be for local municipalities to say, well, even if the state's not going to, as long as we're doing, you know, tests on for COVID, we want to pay for this extra test?
Fair question. The challenge is actually lab capacity at the state. So that's where we send our samples, and they would need to kind of reconfigure their lab capacity to take it. So it's really their call, unfortunately. But I do know that in Clown, we've had communities that move forward with private companies to do wastewater surveillance. I don't know if any of that is happening for polio yet, but I am going to keep an eye out. The CDC sometimes will do pilot projects directly from federal to local. And so if any of that comes up as an option for us, I will definitely apply for us to be included in that work.
Good work for our regional health officer too, right?
Yes, absolutely. We'll push them on that too.
Anything else for Dr. Berry? Any more questions crop up? Nope. Okay, Willie, we haven't seen you for a while. Tell us about where you've been.
Yeah, good to be back. I took it was kind of ironic because I tried to take my big sort of coming out of the COVID pandemic response, my first long vacation. I went to Alaska to visit some family and went on an extended bike ride and then came back and was back at work for 2 whole days. And then we're back in the mass vaccination clinic game. So was a nice welcome back. Great to see and work with that same team, both of staff and volunteers again. We were back out at the Chimicum School District multi-purpose room on Saturday. Did 335 shots at that clinic. As Dr. Berry mentioned, the vast majority were Pfizer. About 100 were Moderna, with the rest of them being the Pfizer vaccine. We're coming up, we'll be at Blue Heron in Port Townsend. Just like before, that Moderna side of the clinic is completely full. We do have about 50 spots left available for the Pfizer Omicron specific booster. So spaces are available there. Call us here at DEM or go to the public health website to sign up and grab your spot there. And we'll be down in Quilcene the following Saturday. There is still space available in that clinic as well. And as Dr. Berry mentioned, our pharmacies have yet again been doing some really stellar work. Safeway had put up a drive-through clinic. It sounded like Mark attended that one. Tri-Area Pharmacy has spaces available as well. So give them a call if for whatever reason one of our Saturday large mass vaccination clinics don't work for you. We are talking about, we'll be in Port Townsend this coming Saturday, Quilcene the following. We're talking about scheduling couple more later in the month of October. However, with the emergency declaration ending at the end of October, that does kind of limit what we can do beyond that date with FEMA funding, as well as with emergency authorization for our use of volunteers. So we're kind of looking through the end of October what our offerings will be, and we'll be sure to update you there. Otherwise, we thank everyone for coming out on Saturday. Looking forward to seeing more folks this coming Saturday at Blue Heron. I'm going to again call your local pharmacy. There are spaces available there over the coming weeks.
And there is, so am I understanding this right? There is no like age recommendation anymore. We're not looking at only people over 65. We're looking at my husband who's 63 can now get vaccinated, get his booster. Yes.
Anyone 12 and up. It's open to everybody now. Thank you for those who did wait a couple weeks to let our highest risk individuals get vaccinated first, but we now have enough for everybody. So great. It's a good time to move forward.
Thank you, Willie. Glad we had some activity for you when you came home.
I didn't want to be too bored.
Nope. Any other questions for Willie or Dr. Berry?
No.
I just want to give a big thanks to our volunteers and staff. Not a lot of counties are putting up mass vaccinations anymore. They've been doing this for years, and they still show up and they still have the best attitudes, even though they're giving us every Saturday for months to do this. So just a big thank you to everyone who makes those work.
Evidence of love for their community. Mm-hmm. Grateful to live in this community. Okay, well, I'm looking at all the clocks and they all say something different, but it's about 10:20 and maybe we'll take a little break before we start.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.